Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Makowicz. Bob, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, Matthew. Happy to be here. Lots to talk about. Exciting last night.
Well, I wanted to start with you, Bob. We'll get into what's going on in your life and how's the kids and family and school, because I was getting that update because I think it relates to a lot of people are going through right now. But what I like to do is sometimes workshop my opening thought with you.
Okay, and
today it's the Raptors need to aggressively throw their hat in the ring for James Harden. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say this, I would trade Lowry and Siakam for Harden.
Okay, so walk me through your thinking.
There's not going to be a lot of huge free agents next year, especially if Giannis does decide to stay with Milwaukee, and the Bucks are doing everything they can. You know, who are the big names? Rudy Gobert and like Victor Oladipo. And mm-hmm. what the Raptors need is someone who's much better than Siakam, and that is James Harden. And if you could build around, say, Harden, Van Vliet, OG Anunoby, and go from there, I think the ceiling is higher than what it would be if you just bring it all back. And I'll say one other point. If they just bring it all back, that's still going to be entertaining. That's going to get you 48 to 52 wins. You're going to win a playoff round. You'll be competitive in the second round. Like, it'll be great, but you're starting to enter a bit of a mushy middle.
Okay, so let's take this piece by piece.
Sure.
Let's leave Harden to last.
Okay.
Do me a favor. Maybe you already know, but how many years does he have left on his deal?
Harden has 2 years left and then a player option.
Okay. So it's a guaranteed 2 years. Okay. Okay. So let's start with what the Raptors' resources would be. Kyle Lowry's got one more year left on his deal. They're going to have to spend a lot of money on Fred VanVleet. They're a terrific backcourt, but it's not the backcourt of the future.
Correct.
He's loved, but everyone deep in their hearts knows his stock will never be higher than this. He's a hell of a piece to flip to a team. And Okay. Siakam. He's really the key to your thinking, right?
Yes.
And the question becomes, so is he a bona fide second, third, all NBA team kind of guy? Or was it found money? He's better than anyone expected, but the league's going to figure him out, and he's closer to Donovan Mitchell than he is to Kawhi Leonard.
I'd even say he's a step below Donovan Mitchell. Utah had an excellent chance of actually beating Denver in that game seven, and Mitchell had some 50-point games, and maybe, you know, Mitchell would have kept on that Jamal Murray-esque run.
I guess what I mean by Mitchell, and he was just the name that popped into my head, is like really, really excellent player, like a top-tier player, but not an elite player. It seems like that's who Siakam is. It's hard to say. He's not that young, but his growth has been so huge. It's just so hard to tell because it just looks so shitty in the bubble.
Yeah.
So he's really the key to your thinking, because if you could give up Lowry and get back Harden, like Lowry plus something for Harden, yes, please. Siakam makes it interesting. What do you think? Now, you're saying they could do it. Are you saying they should do it?
I think they should do it. I look at Siakam, and by the way, I could be absolutely wrong, and what we saw in the final month before the bubble and then the bubble in the playoffs, maybe that's the blip. He continues to grow. But I was soured enough by it that I think Siakam is going to be a very good player. He's your third best player on the championship team, and that's his ceiling. And when I look at the Raptors, everything to me just comes down to core and ceiling. What is your core? How do you make your core better? How do you make your core better to raise your ceiling? And Siakam to me seems like a number three, but he's good enough of a player to make Houston go, yeah, we'll make that deal. You're not getting Harden for anything less than those two pieces.
Yeah, I agree. And probably even some prospects or picks too, because he's Harden. It's an interesting question about Siakam. It really gets right to the heart of who is this guy? Like, you either think, like, if you think he's a star and he's going to be your star for 10 years and really super productive for those 10 years, then this deal doesn't make that much sense. If you think he's a good player, a third or fourth best player on an excellent team, then that deal makes a hell of a lot of sense. I'm inclined to think, I might be thinking emotionally here, Matt, but I think about OG's bad year 2 years ago. He had a bad year, injury, the appendix, just there was lots of stuff going on. And we thought, oh, maybe we overvalued OG. But then when he was healthy and focused, he's a nice player. And I wonder if there isn't some of that with Siakam. Is like, you know, there is a learning curve to try to figure out how to be the number one guy. And it didn't seem like he was ever right in the bubble. Who knows why that is? I mean, it was kind of weird for everybody. You know, the team would never tell us the truth if there was something going on behind the scenes. Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, no. If there was something legit going on, then all of this might be null and void. There was a lot of other players who became stars, and we actually saw high level of play in the bubble in the playoffs, and then the skill and the scoring. Like, there was a lot of great things we saw from a lot of stars, a lot of young players, just not from Siakam. Now, maybe he did have something was going on, and if that's the case, then it's different. It's just, I think, like, Siakam was at his best when the Raptors won the championship, when he was the third best player. And on some nights, he was excellent. I think he was as good as Kawhi for most of that finals against Golden State. But when the pressure of expectations, when things changed, you know, and it's nothing wrong to say this. Most players can't handle it. And Siakam just really fell far.
It's true. I'm inclined to think he's going to be better than he was to end the year, but maybe not as good as some people started talking about like he might be. Because people were saying, you know, potential MVP one day. I don't see that. I don't think many of them see that. Like, Harden's a bona fide MVP.
Yes.
You know, he is an MVP. You know, let me ask you this, though. And now let's get to the Harden piece of it. There's always been a knock on him that in the playoffs, he's not the guy. That there have been times, you know, whether, you know, like against Golden State, when Chris Paul went down, they were in a position to win, but he couldn't put the team on his back and get them over the hump. Maybe that's fair. Maybe that's not fair. I've heard both arguments, but the guy that you're talking about getting does for Toronto what Kawhi did. Is Harden that guy? No one can deny the talent, but is he the guy that wins you a title?
He is not Kawhi. Let's start there. He's not as good as Kawhi Leonard. Mm-hmm. But does he raise the ceiling? Does he help? Does he make the core better? Even if it means you lose Lowry, but who's 34, and Siakam, who's the big mystery to this. And I think Harden just, it gives you a better chance. And who he lost to usually was these juggernaut Golden State teams. That's usually who he lost to. So there's no shame in that. But yes, you have to acknowledge that is one of the risks here is we've seen in the playoffs, like that one game, that game seven, when the team missed like 21 straight three-pointers.
Right.
Absolutely. You've got to put that on the ledger when debating this.
You've knocked Kevin Durant for, you know, his non-Golden State playoff performances at times. I feel like people knock James Harden for the same. Is it possible, and forgive me if this is kind of just like one step too far, but is there a subcategory within the elite between greatest player slash then greatest playoff player? Like, are there subcategories of the elite? Anthony Davis belonged there because he was great in the final, and he was just great through the playoffs. And people weren't sure if that was going to be the case because he hadn't been tested, but he proved he was. Whereas a James Harden has never proven that he is. Steph Curry is proven. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to think, like, who's another example? Harden would be an especially good one. Giannis hasn't proven it.
Like, yes.
There does seem like, and this is, I guess, what we've always said was the Dan Marino argument. You've made the case he's the most talented quarterback in history. Still didn't have the championship. There does feel like there has to be a distinction between the guy who won you a series and the guy who hasn't.
Is that? And I mean, Well, this goes in the conversation of, you know, what's the proper measurement for the greatness of a player, and does playoffs, is there not enough sample size? And we go down that road, and, you know, with Giannis, how much of it is because, you know, just bad coaching, and with, and how many players could legitimately, like, I don't think any single player was going to be able to beat Golden State at their prime, like, especially when Durant was going. You know, you look at when Cleveland got swept by Golden State, LeBron put up historic numbers. It just didn't matter.
Yeah, they were a freak team, even among excellent teams. Well, they're in the category of the greatest of all time. I mean, yeah. So, you know, it's funny because I agree with you, only because how could you disagree with a plan that would get you James Harden? I think it's a little optimistic to think it would just be Kyle and Pascal Siakam. I think you'd have to start throwing in some futures as well, and then you really are extending yourself.
Once you start throwing in all these futures, unprotected picks, pick swaps, all the stuff Milwaukee did to get Drew Holiday, now we're having a different conversation. But I think Houston might be a little bit desperate. You know, they get a guy in Siakam that you can build around. You know, just your ceiling's not going to be that high. And you got Lowry for a year, then he's off the books, and he can be there to help younger players. So maybe with Houston, they're also a team that their owner made his money in restaurants and casinos. So who knows how much money he's losing? Yeah, you know, maybe you do the deal.
Yeah, it's a great point, Matt. And he's going to go somewhere, unless there's a big reverse, because all the articles for the last week have been about, you know, it seems like there's a fire and no one can put it out, and no one wants to put it out. Russ, it feels like we'll wind up in either Orlando or Detroit, or probably not Washington, but some also ran organization that just needs a star.
They need someone to put on the program.
Yeah. You know, you could see it being in Orlando because, you know, it ain't Mo Bamba. I thought Mo Bamba was going to work. But anyway, and it ain't Aaron Gordon. So who knows? Who knows? I think what it really comes down to, and this is what makes it so interesting for us Raptors fans, is we don't really know who this team is right now. You know, we've seen signs that they could be pretty much as good as they were under Kawhi, like almost, or not that close. I don't know. Well, you can make a good case for either.
I just think with Lowry 34, that style of play is both heroic, but how well does that age? You know, I think last year was this beautiful, wonderful season where they defied all expectations, pure professionalism. Everyone worked their ass off. Everyone bought in. But how often are you going to be able to have that? And I think that Milwaukee, no matter what Giannis does, Milwaukee is better on paper this year than they were last year. Philly got better just by having Doc Rivers and Daryl Morey there. Boston was better than Toronto last season. Brooklyn will be better. Who knows what the hell that looks like? Like, you know, there's all these teams when you can say, okay, they've gotten a bit better. I don't know if you can say that about the Raptors unless OG takes that next step.
Is it possible we can stop the pod? Because I got to take care of the dog real fast, and I'll be 2 minutes.
Oh, sure. I'll pause for a second, and then we'll just start up again.
You know what? No, better idea. Do the commercial.
And by the way, Bob, how dare you say do the commercial? Shame on you. This isn't a commercial. This is a favor for everyone listening, because our sponsor is a friend of ours. It's our lawyer, Jeff Pollack. And if you need a lawyer, and at some point you're going to need a lawyer, it's very simple. You might as well get one who's good at their job, who actually cares, small law firm. You're not going to get lost. He puts in the due diligence. And if you need a lawyer, jeffpollack.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollack.com. That phone number is 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. When Bob does come back, one other topic I want to discuss with him is I'm watching on one of the buildings in front of me, like it's about like 100 feet away. I don't know. It's a good distance. I still have privacy where I live, But there's two little kids running around on the balcony, and they're perfectly safe. They're the balcony the is higher than them. It's just, I don't know. I get nervous when I see kids running around on a balcony that's probably about 19 to 21 floors up. That's I don't know. There's something about that seems really freaky. Are you back, Bob? All right, Bob's not back. I mean, I'll probably just edit some of this out. Maybe I'll leave it and we can see my ability to vamp.
Leave it all in. I'm back.
Okay, you're back. So, Bob, before we get back to basketball, I'm watching two kids run around on a balcony that's about 20 floors up. The balcony's higher than the kids, but I'm still watching it nervously.
Yeah, I can't stand balconies. I really can't. They make me, this is like, you know how we all have our sort of, our hot buttons, the things that freak us out?
Yeah.
Balconies freak me out. Mm-hmm. I don't even like as an adult to stand on one. I hate balconies.
The dumb thing for me, I love balconies, but if I get too high, then I get nervous. But if I fall off my balcony, I'm dead. Right. It's no different. It just happens a split second sooner on the 14th floor than it does on the 50th.
That is an excellent point, and it speaks to, you know, people don't get nervous when they're swimming in 7 feet of water, but they get nervous when they're swimming in 50 feet of water. Yeah, it's irrelevant.
Yeah, it's true.
If you can't stand with your nose above the waterline, it's too deep.
What's going on with your dog?
Oh, she got into the hat box. Mm. Our dog's really, like, it sounds like I'm a proud parent, but trust me, I'm not. Our dog's really smart. She's a smart breed, and she's born, like, she's just another Makowitz that is hard to deal with. And all Makowitzes, and even her digestion isn't that great. Like, she's definitely one of us.
Oh, God.
It's so weird. She's sweet, but chippy.
Okay. Yep.
Sound familiar?
It does. So I have
like to be told what to do.
I have rapid fire questions for you on your dog.
Okay, go for it.
Worst thing she's done so far.
Good question. She did shred some of Charlotte's homework. The dog actually ate the homework.
Wow. Was Charlotte happy or sad?
Oh, happy.
Okay, good. Barky, quiet. What are we talking about?
Definitely not quiet. Barky, but not yappy. She's barky when she wants something. Like, she's definitely not shy to express her opinions.
Right.
but she's not a yappy dog. Like, it doesn't happen all the time.
How is it with the pooping outside? How's that going?
Pretty good, actually. Not bad. And she sleeps through the night. The biggest problem is, like, she's got a motor. You know what she's like? She's like, you know, in hockey when they talk about your scrum, like, she's like Zach Hyman.
Okay.
Like, she's got a motor. She gets in the corners. She really digs out the puck. Teammates love her. Not a lot of finesse to her game at this point.
Last question. Is there anything more humiliating when you're on a sidewalk and the dog has basically announced, I'm pooping, and you got to sit and wait, and do you look to see when she's done? Is there anything more humiliating than those 35 seconds?
Yeah, absolutely. Walking around with a bag of that poop in your hands for 20 minutes because the dog still needs to be walked, and running into people you know and sitting around trying to chat with them while you're holding a bag of shit.
Oh, that just seems like the worst.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely among the worst things.
Yeah.
It must be really hard when you're single. I can only imagine you're a dude. You run into someone you find attractive. You're trying to be all cool. You got a bag of poop in your hand. Maybe it's humanizing. I don't know. It's been a long time.
All right. That is all my dog questions for today. There will be more. Where were we on the NBA? Harden trade?
Harden and, you know, what the Raptors should do. I think everybody's kind of turned their focus to why Masai and Bobby Webster aren't signed yet. You know, I think more than any individual roster decision, people kind of expect that Fred will stay. People kind of expect that Serge will go, you know, unless there's some kind of like freaky turn of circumstance that's different than that. I think most of us really want to know, what's the deal with Masai and Bobby Webster? You got it.
Yeah.
What are you hearing?
I'm hearing nothing. I have no contacts. My contacts are Twitter. Please, I have no contacts.
I like how you've been in sports now for what, on air for 20 years?
Yeah, that's right.
No contacts.
No, you have one. You have one contact.
Actually, no, I made a couple.
Really?
No, I just happened to have the best one. You know, so I wasn't desperate. Yeah. But yeah, no, of course I've gone out and made contacts.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
Well, and it's been a while since I've needed them because I'm not in the sports game anymore. But yeah, of course.
Could you give me your contacts? Because sure. I just don't like asking for things. Like my girl's got a charity calendar, this like advent calendar she's putting out. And instead of chocolate, you get to win a different prize every day. And I am so bad at asking people I know for donations or things like that. Like it makes me miserable to ask. I don't like being reliant on anyone for anything ever, except for, you know, like things with my friends and family, like emotionally, but I just don't like asking for things.
I understand. But the key is not to ask. The key is to create a phony aura of friendship, so it feels like an exchange of things.
Do you got anything you'd like to donate, Bob?
Nah. Yeah.
See, again.
No, I got lots of stuff. I got lots of stuff. You know, one thing that really struck me about the NBA and the draft last night is how interesting all these teams are compared to the hockey teams that like all these drafts. You know, first of all, like football, because a lot of these kids are going to play right away. So the story is a lot closer to the surface. It's how are they going to impact next year? As opposed to hockey, where they may not see the ice for 2 or 3 years, or baseball, where they may not see the ice, you know, the diamond for 3 or 4 years or more. You know, so it is different in that sense. But don't you just get a greater sense when you watch the NBA or the NFL draft of urgency and importance versus the other ones?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And also because this year being different, but usually you're going to see college football and college basketball more than you're going to see whoever the top prospects are in baseball, where it could be on a high school team or some university team, or hockey, where it could be anywhere around the world. And you just don't have as much access to it. You know, there's only a couple, you know, except for maybe like during the World Juniors. And so you're right. There is a greater sense of urgency because you can also see where they fit in. You know, you can see, okay, the Raptors drafted, you know, the point guard who's kind of short, but is a good shooter and is really smart. It's like, oh, okay, this guy can develop for a year, and you can sort of see where he would fit on the court. In baseball's the worst. Baseball's the only sport where you draft a guy, and then oftentimes you never even sign him, and they go back to Vanderbilt. Like, how many times are the Blue Jays, they drafted a guy, and then, they weren't able to come up for a deal with him, and, yeah, he's back in college. Like, what? Why does that happen?
You make a great point about Vanderbilt, too, because it comes up all the time in baseball. What the hell is going on in Vanderbilt that everybody always wants to go back?
I know. And it's certainly not their football team, but some of the baseball team.
So, you know, last night, Anthony Edwards was getting ripped, the first overall pick. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch him play 1 minute.
No.
I had no opinion, and yet I was totally ready to proclaim him a bust. it's weird how that happens, but it's just like when they say, but you know what it is? You know what the key is? At this stage, if they talk about, like, you can say he has to develop a jump shot, and I can live with that. Because we've seen players develop jump shots. When I hear he has to want it, I'm out.
I think with him, there was some stories about how he liked football more, but he was just better at basketball. Mm. And yeah, that's, and listen, like on ESPN, they were raving about him and just about the physical skills and what he can bring and all of this. But yeah, there always is that red flag because we always look at the flash and the money that comes with being a high pick in any draft in any sport, but the sacrifice, the waking up early, the working out, the discipline, that's also a huge part of it. And that can be hard to do day in and day out.
I'm convinced, and this is just the benefit of age, is the only thing that distinguishes people who are very successful from people who are kind of successful or not at all is how much you want it. I think talent plays in at a certain point, but it comes in really at the end when you're talking about the subtle differences between extremely successful people. Mostly, I don't think it's a coincidence that the gym rats are the ones that wind up overperforming. If I was a GM, like everyone's excited about Tyrese Maxey, and I watched him play a bunch with Kentucky, and people are talking about how he's just got that character, but he's small. These guys always find a way to overproduce, you know? And there's nothing, like, I'm looking at this guy. He goes to Minnesota. That's strike one. He's a two-sport athlete who may like the other sport at least as much as this one. That's strike number two. They say he has the ability to be a great defender.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, I have the ability to be 160 pounds, but I haven't quite gotten there, have I?
I have the ability to leave a clean vegan lifestyle.
Matt, I have the ability to tolerate your wine Instagrams.
Oh, I have the ability to not drink Bordeaux, but I'm going to, because I was at a Bordeaux tasting seminar on Tuesday, and now I've got all these bottles that they got to be finished. It's like an alcoholic Mission Impossible. There's only so much time before they turn bad.
I want my life to be scouted the way that this guy's defense was scouted, where people just talk about all the things I could do if I put my mind to it. Matt, I could read Ulysses by James Joyce. Say I have, because I could.
Yeah, that's where it ends. I don't think I could. I don't think there's any way I could read Ulysses.
I'm looking at a copy of it right now. I'm going to pick a page at random.
Oh, God.
Why? This is sort of like my workout for the team.
All right.
Let's see here. Randomly, the youngster will be all right, Martin Cunningham said as they passed out of the Castle Yard gate. The policeman touched his forehead. God bless you, Martin Cunningham said cheerily. And he signed to the waiting. Actually, no, I can't do it.
Yeah. No.
I'm out. I just tapped. I'm out.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because the job of every draft broadcast is to convince you that this is interesting. And one of the ways to make sure people aren't interested is to say, there aren't any franchise players in here, but there's some very good pros.
Oh, yeah. No. Last night, Bob, there's great depth in the 20s. Here's how you know you don't have any stars. When there's no consensus, that means there's no stars. When the number one team or the number two team would trade down if the right offer, there are no stars. When LeBron was being drafted, no one said, maybe I'll trade down with Detroit. It never happened.
And the night when LeBron's drafted, the great thing about it, too, is like they're 24 on the clock and it's New Orleans is picking. You're still talking about LeBron. You just sort of casually who goes at 22 because you just got something so exciting to talk about. I don't know about you, but I find for me the drop-off point on any draft in the first round is usually around pick 18, unless my team hasn't gone yet. And then I'll usually go and then come back when I think my team's going to go. But I can usually sustain energy that's pretty exciting, probably even more than is deserved, until about 12.
That's where you and I differ, Bob.
And researching the first 12 picks more than paying attention. And by 18, I don't care anymore.
I'm an addict to both basketball and NFL draft. I watched all of it. I don't know anything about these players, but I'm always in. I love talking heads, talking about the future and speculation with every team. The amount of players in tears, hugging family, you know, always gets you. I'm in. I had a delightful time, you know, between a couple different appellations in the Medoc that I was consuming last night watching the draft.
I don't know what those are. When I was watching, I had to laugh. There was a pick number 18, the last one I watched live. Dallas, Minnesota, one of them took a 7-foot Serbian kid and announced that he's 2 years away from being ready for the league. And I thought, take a good look. You will never see this guy again. Take a good look.
Oh, they did the Bruno thing.
The what?
Bruno. When
exactly.
Yeah. He's 2 years away from being 2 years away.
That's exactly it. I like the Israeli kid with all the wine behind him.
I know. I may or may not have paused the screen to try to see what the bottles were.
Did you see any good ones?
I couldn't tell. Now, if they were Israeli, I'm assuming they're from the Golan Heights Appalachian. But again, I couldn't figure it out.
How is Adam Silver not the head of a tech company?
Oh, I know.
He just looks like the way Elon Musk should look.
Yes. Or like he'd also be one of those like James Bond villain types I could see.
Collarless shirt, like that little Nehru jacket kind of vibe with the golden buttons.
Oh, absolutely. There is not a collar to be seen in James Bond villain Adam Silver's wardrobe.
Mm-hmm. Stroking the cat.
Stroking the cat.
He's very good, and he's obviously incredibly intelligent, but I'm almost amazed by how bad a knock Gary Bettman gets for his physical charisma. When people will kiss Adam Silver's butt, and he looks like Count Orlok from Nosferatu. And I'm not saying that to, like, you know, who the hell am I? Like, you know, I look like Seth Rogen after a bender, so I'm not bragging to anybody. He just commands such presence. You don't give a shit about any of the other stuff. He just feels like the kind of guy who could solve any problem.
Also, he looks like a pencil.
I hadn't thought that, but that's an interesting analogy. Rhys Davis, God, that's a hard job, eh?
Oh, yeah. There's so much juggling going on and so much information. Like, he's like, I've already forgot the name. Who's the guy we loved on CNN who could tell you about every county in the United... Oh, John King.
That's true.
John King and Davis. Like, just put those, like... The person who's juggling an NFL or NBA draft, I feel they could do John King's job.
You know, ESPN has so much interesting talent, and I don't know why it was Jay Williams and what's his name? Matt Schmidt, I guess I understand. Is that his name? The guy who was doing like the international stuff. Jay Williams, I don't like, he's fine, but they've got so many interesting personalities. It just felt like it was a very lackluster presentation. But Jay Billis, I want to focus on for a second. Is he starting to get old man angry?
Ooh.
He looked kind of old man angry to me a couple times last night. Like he's still, his shoes are pinching his feet.
Do you think, like, you're right. He certainly often had a stink on his face. Mm-hmm. Was it because there was no stars? Was he getting angry seeing shots of families and people having parties and hugging without masks? I don't know. Yeah, there was certainly some of that.
He just looked like an old guy who has to stay up past his usual bedtime. Like he had that vibe. And he's not that old, obviously. He actually looks kind of great. But there was just a look on his face. It's funny. I said to my wife, are you going to watch the NBA draft with me? First question, can I make any money off it? I said, no, probably not, unless you can pick who's going to get drafted number one. She's quiet for a second. She goes, is it Paulie Wingspan?
By the way, Paulie Wingspan should have stayed at LSU for one more year to develop his jump shot.
In other words, Tyrus Thomas.
Oh, my God. We all fell in with Tyrese Thomas in the tournament. He had that one crazy putback dunk where he did things humans can't do physically. And everyone was like, I want that on my team.
Mm-hmm. Whenever I see freak athlete, I always think Joey Graham.
Yeah.
And you just know, like when people say freak, I don't want freak athlete. It doesn't do me any good. Do obsessive practicer.
But no one looked better in the layup line before a game than Joey Graham. You looked at him and go, oh, that guy's going to do good stuff.
Yeah, last night, Obi Toppin is going to be Joey Graham.
That's because he went to the
Knicks. You're a Knicks enthusiast.
Yeah.
Did you admire the fact that every single, like, I don't know what it is about New York teams, God bless them, but every single analyst beforehand said, oh, Tyrese Halliburton's still available. Yeah, got to take him. With the next pick, the Knicks take Obi Toppin.
Of course. Yes. Like, just once, just do the thing. I want the Knicks to do the thing that people think is smart.
Like, yeah, never, but it's never, Matt. It's
I
never.
Know.
Like, anytime a New York team is going to pick, you know they're going to take someone that did not come up in the conversation preceding their pick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And And I forget who Charlotte took, but Spike Lee was at the party cheering. They're like, what the fuck is
Spike Lee? Cole Anthony. I felt so bad for him. Cole Anthony's highlight pack was all pictures of his dad, Greg. Yeah. That reminded me, actually, I want to get a UNLV 1990 Jerry Tarkanian Running Rebels jersey. And I want to get...
I'll get you the towel.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to chew on a towel and on the back, and this is how old school it goes. I want to get Scurry on the back for Moses Scurry, the world's toughest looking sixth man. that team had Stacey Augman, Greg Anthony, Larry Johnson, of course. I'm trying to remember who the big man was. He got drafted too. Anyway, that was back when you could express rebellion through college basketball teams. Next up was the Fab Five.
It was a better college basketball was better then.
God, it's non-existent now. It was so good then. You could hate Leitner for 4 years.
Oh yeah. Now you only have 1 year to hate whoever the white guy is on Duke. You only get 1 year to hate that guy.
I think it's Mike Krzyzewski. He'll be around. We've talked a lot about the draft.
Yeah, we have. One last draft thing. And this is not about specifically last night, just in general. Another thing I hate when my team is drafting and it's a little bit later and they spend like 18 seconds on the pick and then they just move on. I'm like, no, tell me more about this pass rusher from Penn State. I need to know more. Why are you talking about who the Raiders are drafting?
You know what? I like this segment. This is actually a good segment for us. We haven't had segments in a while, but we'll call it And Another Thing I Hate. Mm. And another thing I hate.
Yeah.
I understand the human aspect story to meeting these draft picks. You know, they try to tell us a little bit about how they got here, but because these conversations are so compressed, it forces to basically ask every question this way. So insert name here died. What do you want to say to them today? Or how does that make you feel right now? It's like, wow, I've got to consume a lot of emotional information here in a short period of time.
Oh, yeah. And then it immediately pivots to their jump shot. It's your mom and grandmother died of cancer. What do you think they're thinking? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So you're going to be working on your three-pointer?
You nailed it, man. That's exactly it. Like, it's this weird sort of dip into like the darkest corners of this person's mind. And it's like, you know, and then all of a sudden, yeah, you're talking about lateral move on defense.
Yeah. It's, you know what it is? You need some sort of emotional amuse-bouche. You need some cleanser, palate cleanser in between the dark recesses of your emotion to how you're going to work a zone.
Do you know what the key there is? And this is the amuse-bouche, the sherbet, if you will. Mm-hmm. Ask about their college coach.
Mm, yeah.
The leadership figure that transfers you back to basketball.
Right. Okay. So it's mom's death, Calipari playing for the Nuggets.
You got it, man. Like, honestly, that is the arc. You nailed it.
Yeah.
Look at you. Maybe you're going to do it next.
It's almost like I'm a broadcaster.
Merrick did that for Sportsnet on the draft, didn't he? Didn't he do the interviews with players?
Merrick?
Yeah.
They let him that close to the hockey players? That's a mistake by Sportsnet.
Did you notice both TSN and Sportsnet had the draft last night?
Did they really?
Yes.
I figured one was just showing Happy Gilmore.
Tin Cup?
No, Happy Gilmore was on the other night.
Oh, was it?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, we didn't talk about...
By the way...
Raps, yes, sorry. You don't know anything about him, I'm assuming?
I know nothing about him. I'm going to do my research because he might be coming on the show today. I'm going to rewatch the draft pick and then spend an hour reading what Blake Murphy or Eric Kareen has to say, and then I'll parrot it like it's my own information.
Now, I see on The Ringer, they gave the draft pick an A, and on ESPN, they gave the draft pick an A. It's amazing how much power these draft picks have. But I think a lot of it is probably also just reputation. People trust Masai.
Yeah, absolutely. But by the way, going back to the draft, it is amazing the emotions I will have on what grades my favorite teams get. Like, I get so happy when I get anything higher, a B+ or higher. It makes me so happy.
So true. Let me see. I'm on CBS Sports right now. Let me scroll down to 29. Meanwhile, while I'm scrolling, another fun game last night was the watching the analysts pretend that they don't know what they probably do know about Klay Thompson's injury, but they can't say.
Oh, yeah. That's a God, that stinks. I hope it's not as bad. I hope it's a quick recovery. Just the game is more fun when that coward Kevin Durant left. And if it's Steph and Klay and Draymond doing their thing again.
CBS Sports gives them a B plus.
Okay. Two A's and a B plus. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we're doing really good here.
Oh, you know what I'm going to do now?
Hmm.
Bob, if we do get to interview the first round pick, my first question is going to be, did you deserve two A's and a B plus?
That's so funny. I'm sure it's the same as his GPA and from whatever school he came from.
Nevada?
USA Today gets a B.
Oh, fuck you, USA Today.
Mm-hmm.
What does Mel Kiper say?
All right, Sports Illustrated. I'm going through all the also-rans here.
Yeah, Sports Illustrated, that website takes forever. There's 1,700 commercials and videos that pop up.
What is your go-to for information? Is it still ESPN?
It depends the sport, but like I'll do my roulette of ESPN, The Athletic, The Ringer, and then if it's like hockey or you know certain of our insiders, obviously I'll go to TSN if there's a LeBron or you know something from Darren Drager or something like that.
B plus from SI.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah, no, I'm feeling good about all this. Okay, what are your AMC? We probably don't have a ton of time left. What are some of your AMC questions from this week?
Ooh, yeah, let's see. We did non-traditional holiday movies.
Oh, okay. Is that by Die Hard?
No, Gremlins was on AMC yesterday.
Yeah, definitely a holiday movie.
Mm-hmm. But a very non-traditional one. I find if there's lots of murder, now it's non-traditional.
Right. Like, what was that slasher movie called? Was it Black Christmas?
Yep, Black Christmas.
A Canadian legend. I think Margot Kidder was actually in it.
Margot Kidder was indeed in the original Black Christmas.
All right, then. So what were your top five non-traditional Christmas movies?
I got to pull up my list, but, you know, obviously, like, Die Hard was number two. Number one for me, and this won't come as much of a shock, the movie opens with a big Thanksgiving meal. It ends with a big Thanksgiving meal. And in the middle, two actors won Oscars. Yes, Bob, I'm talking about Hannah and her sisters.
Interesting. But like, what holiday are you talking about?
Thanksgiving.
Oh, well, that's not a Die Hard movie. Oh, you just
mean no.
Conventional any holiday.
Yeah, any holiday. Doesn't just have to be Christmas.
Oh, that's actually an interesting pick. Okay, I kind of like that thinking.
Yeah, you got Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is obviously going to be there.
You know, the Thanksgiving movie is underrated by Canadians because we don't look at Thanksgiving the way the Americans do.
Yeah.
We like it, but they love it.
Here's a good one. Dennis Leary starred in The Ref.
Yeah, I've never seen that one, but I've heard it's good.
It's really good. Also, I got Office Christmas Party, Edward Scissorhands, The Night Before, Krampus, The Apartment. Those were my some of my other
picks. Very good. That's a very good one. Well, you know, your lists are always so sophisticated, Matt, and you put so much love into them.
I put too much time into them. Today, with Nanny McPhee on during game day, your top five performances by actors who undergo significant physical transformation for their role.
Wow. Now that I'm assuming that's an Emma Thompson thing?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So let me throw out some here. So obviously De Niro, Raging Bull. Now, can it be prosthetic or does it have to be actual physical?
Whatever you want.
Now, what about The Irishman? Does that count? Because it's CGI transformation.
It can. It's not on my list. Actually, I hadn't thought about it. But yeah, that could absolutely work.
Okay. Boom, 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 boom. Do you remember back in the day when horror movies, you would kind of grade how good the monster transformations were?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was like the idea of gore was so different. You know, like Fangoria basically built a small cottage industry out of just pictures of gore.
Yep.
I feel like what gets people today into horror movies? Sorry, I'm taking this in a different direction, but it occurred to me, like, we don't talk about quality of kills. We don't talk about quality of gore. We don't talk about quality of special effects. It seems to be like it's quality of trauma. That's what people want.
Yeah.
From horror movies these days is how accurately did you portray trauma?
Yeah. The psychological side to it. Back in the day, you're right. It was that was a great kill. You know, we don't celebrate Jason Voorhees putting down the machete to kill someone with a spear gun. You know, these things aren't celebrated the way they used to.
You know, the whole point of going to see a horror movie was to try and figure out what was the most creative way of offing someone.
Yes.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I heard anybody talk about that. There's also like, we're also in a big ghost phase right now. And ghosts don't really do that. Ghosts torment people. They don't really like, it's not... You know, we need a killer with some personality movie.
Been a while. Yeah. Yeah. I love the Paranormal Activities, but they don't have the same sort of kill. It's more the psychological.
Totally. Angst and dread and all that kind of stuff. But none of them are any fun.
You want to hear my top five?
Yeah, 100%.
At number five, Charlize Theron for Bombshell. She looked like Megyn Kelly.
Okay. Haven't seen it, but that's cool.
Christian Bale. Not Machinist, because I never saw it, but as Dick Cheney in Vice.
Okay. Interesting.
Number three, Gary Oldman, Darkest Hour.
Okay. Is that a Number Jeff Paul, Winston Churchill thing?
No, it's just he looked like Winston Churchill. It was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you mentioned Robert De Niro. My favorite part of it was that to gain weight, he went to Italy. And just and ate as much pasta as he could. Scorsese was so alarmed by his weight gain and labored breathing that production was shut down.
Mm-hmm. I heard that they were worried that he damaged his heart.
Yeah. And number one, because he had his shirt off for a lot of it, but Tom Hanks put on 50 pounds and then lost 55 pounds for Castaway.
Yeah, that's a really good one, too. There's a million of these. It feels like weight's at the heart of a lot of them, because I guess that's the one thing people can control.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about to do something today that's going to surprise you. I'm going to watch The Rise of Skywalker, because I've never seen it before.
Oh, the final one. Oh, you'll enjoy it. It's good.
I've watched the first 20 minutes. It's an abomination.
Okay.
But I'm hoping it gets better.
It will.
Okay, cool. You know what? They've got so much story to set up. The first 15 minutes is just basically exposition built into scenes.
Yeah.
But if there's a story's about to start, I'm assuming there's some kind of romance between Oscar Isaac and Daisy Ridley. Are they the new Leia and Han?
I'll say they're not the new Leia and Luke. How about that?
Okay, fair enough. Okay. It's weird seeing Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah, I'm not enjoying that part of it.
Yeah, it's like I'm not going to watch the final episodes of Jeopardy. I couldn't do that.
And I've started rewatching Better Call Saul. You know what? I'm starting to become, and I don't know, I wonder if this is like a thing that other people are experiencing, but there's so much new TV that I find now in a weird way I'm going back to the comfort food of shows I've already liked. It's almost like the way people listen to music. You get to a certain point, you're like, I don't want any more music. I just want to remember the songs I like.
You know what I was doing when I wasn't watching the draft?
What?
I was watching season two of Veep.
Interesting. I wonder if this is something people are doing, if they're just confused by all of their options and they just want to remember something they already liked.
I think watching BoJack too. What's that?
I started rewatching BoJack.
I think you're onto something. At some point, it's sensory overload. It's like I can't get swept away 17 different times by 17 different shows.
That's it. And, you know, like now, you know, COVID and all kinds of stuff happening in our lives and we got a dog. And honestly, Matt, like, I'm so proud of myself for getting to the end of this pod because my tongue barely works. I'm so tired. I never sleep. And like these shows are so, there's so much happening. I can't think that much. Give me something easy. But also, I don't want to watch like one of these, you know, Love Island shows. So my middle ground is stuff I already figured out. I'm redoing crossword puzzles.
Well, for me, it's Veep, and then I'll probably just go back to 30 Rock. That's what I normally do every 3 years.
So good. You know, I can't stop watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I've seen these episodes, probably some of them 10 times each, but I just love it. But I think I love it only because, honestly, like, I can't eat potato chips, and I need something that makes me feel better for no good reason.
I might have to go to the potato chips.
Yeah. Oh, you don't like 30 Rock. You don't like Brooklyn Nine-Nine,
oh,
right?
No, I don't mind it. I just, again, there's too many shows. That's all.
That's exactly it. Too many shows. But there's always time for us, Matt.
That's right. Because one thing, there's not too many podcasts. It's time more people got into it.
You know what? I subscribe to every podcast now that I think could be interesting. And I must be up to 200.
That's stupid. There's a better chance of you reading James Joyce's Ulysses than listening to all those podcasts.
Well, you heard that sentence I threw out there. It wasn't that great.
Yeah, no, it wasn't.
I'm assuming in the context it worked better.
Bob, you enjoy the weekend, and I think you're going away up north tomorrow. So you have a fantastic time, and we'll chat next week.
All right, buddy boy. Onwards and upwards.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.